Welcome to Startosphere, the second season of Talk Energy with Yes Europe, a Europe's largest energy NGO for young professionals and students, Yes Europe. In each episode, we talk to founders of energy and sustainability startups that have received investment and show strong potential in becoming a future leader in the energy industry.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Talk Energy with Yes Europe. Today we have Gil, the CEO and founder of Decarbon. Gil, do you want to like give an introductory pitch about yourself?
Sure. Thanks a lot for the short introduction. So my name is Gil Scheltiens. I'm co-founder of Decarbon, a spin-off company from the University of Antwerp. And we have been active now for almost 2 years. And it has been an exciting journey so far. My background is in chemical engineering. I was always involved in plasma processing throughout my academic and also industrial career. And I'm happy that I can pursue my passion.
Yeah, wonderful. And it's also a beautiful city, a beautiful place where you've started up Antwerpen. I can only attest to that. And thank you so much for giving us an introduction to Decarbon as well. But if I understand this correctly, you are a young startup with an emerging technology in your arsenal. And I just wanted to get a bit more scope behind Decarbon's goals and its ambitions. So we'd be glad to have you explain that for us as well.
Yes. Well, despite the fact that we are a young startup company, we have very high ambitions. We all started this journey from a more principal point of view. Because we believe that we can add to a brighter future, a more clean future, and we hope to be a part of that. We know that, yeah, let's say there will be many challenges ahead, and we know that Decarbon alone will not be sufficient to tackle all these challenges, but we hope to be part of the general solution. With Decarbon. So with Decarbon, we are really striving for the ultimate circular economy. And that is, at the end, recycling of even the tiniest molecules like CO2, carbon dioxide.
Okay, so let's bring the conversation on a more technical point of view. First of all, why do you use plasma to split CO2 into CO and O?
Right. And that's actually the what I call the million-dollar question. Because if you look at the landscape, the technological landscape, there are numerous ways to actually start utilizing CO2. What we have found is that plasma is a very efficient way to split CO2 into CO and oxygen. And actually, you start to make this molecule, an inert molecule like CO2, active again. Because from carbon monoxide, you can start synthesizing almost any hydrocarbon that you want. It's really a building block for the chemical or petrochemical industry. And that makes it much more interesting. So that's what we call creating added value. At this moment, if you look at the competitive landscape, there are numerous projects throughout the world looking at the sequestration of carbon dioxide, CO2, they will put into the ground. Our vision there is that this is a very nice way to tackle climate change, but only in a short term. Because putting CO2 into the ground is not a circular motion. It is cradle to grave, basically, and literally almost. So we know that it's a necessary means to reach the European targets on short term, which is what I call 2030. But it's not a circular motion. We see the sequestration of CO2 the same as picking up the mat and sweeping the dirt underneath. And that's good for a few weeks, but at some point the dirt will pile up, and it's not a sustainable solution. So how we regard this is that we like to treat CO2 more as an opportunity, as feedstock again. But you need to be able to remove this one oxygen from the CO2 molecule. And plasma is very efficient to do so. We have been performing competitive landscapes where we are, for example, comparing ourselves to the reverse water gas shift, which is the golden standard in industry to make carbon monoxide from CO2. But there you need hydrogen to reduce the CO2. So it's quite a very costly procedure, both in CAPEX as OPEX. And next to that, you have emergent technologies like electrochemistry, electrolysis, for example. And what we have seen there is also there that we are at least 30% more efficient in the use of electricity, and at least 50% cheaper in installation of the equipment. And the main reason why we are so efficient in the use of electricity is because you have to think about this in terms of principles. CO2 is a gas. CO is also a gas. But electrochemistry in its principal nature is dealing with liquids, an electrolyte, which is passing the current, basically. And it will be the same in CO2 reduction. So while the plasma is also a gaseous state, so it's much more trivial to reduce CO2 to CO in a gaseous form. And that's why we are so, let's say, performant in the use of electricity. Like I said, we're also very efficient in terms of installation costs. And the reason for that is because our equipment is composed out of almost one material, which is steel. So we are not using any expensive materials or rare earth metals. And also the geometries that we are using are non-complex. While in electrochemistry, you are doing a multi-stack of electrodes. And all of these also have different expansion coefficients, very difficult to scale. And that's also one of the targets for the carbon is scalability. Because if you want to be at the forefront tackling the climate change, then it's all about volumes. And that's exactly why we chose plasma. Because it is very easy from both as from cost perspective, as from engineering perspective, to scale this type of technology.
Thank you so much. That is really, really elaborate and very descriptive as well. And I get this whole understanding that of the idea of treating carbon dioxide as an opportunity, as an active material that we can then convert instead of passively storing it or sequestering it. So then you mentioned earlier that, just a bit earlier, that the process was at about 30% more efficient in the use of electricity. Focusing on this, a simple yes or no question, how energy intensive is plasma conversion of carbon dioxide using plasma? Is it an energy intensive process? Yes or no?
Absolutely. So you need electricity. That's actually our fuel is electricity, basically. Mm-hmm. Now, if you look at the amount of energy that you require, this is actually very an interesting discussion point. Because there is a lower limit. There is a thermodynamic minimum amount of energy that you need to provide to the CO2 molecule to debond or to split that specific bond. And that minimum required energy is 2,800 kilowatt hours per ton CO produced. Now, if you look at where we are with the technology, at this moment, we are showcasing that we can reach 4,000 kilowatt hours per ton CO produced. So that means that there is still room for improvement, but this is super difficult. I can explain you why. Because you have to provide an, and so in case I do a perfect reactor where there are no heat losses, I will still need 2,800 kilowatt hours per ton CO produced. That's the bare minimum. And that's in a perfect world. Now, as soon as we heat something, because the plasma itself is also a very, let's say, hot medium. So that means that you also have heat losses. And our, let's say, invention that we performed is that we are minimizing the heat losses towards the outside. So we are putting all the energy that we can add to the molecules instead of the environment, basically. So it's all about minimizing your heat losses, basically. And that's where we are very performant with the plasma.
Mm-hmm. And a quick follow-up to this, I do understand that, yes, we are right now at a phase where meeting or achieving this optimal energy conversion, if I may say, from electricity to the products is still not at the phase where we can sufficiently provide this energy required or reach this optimal value right now. But if the idea were to achieve a completely carbon-free process of conversion, we would then have to theoretically use renewable or electricity derived from renewable energy in order to run this process. So do you think in today's ecosystem this would be possible? If yes, what would be a source? Would it be direct electricity derived from sources like solar or wind, or would it be like an intermediate carrier like green hydrogen?
Yes, that's a very good question. Actually, with the carbon, the first collaboration that we initiate with industrial companies is through a techno-economic assessment. And basically, in these specific assessments, we can actually simulate the use of electricity from the grid, which has a certain carbon footprint, or the use of green electricity coming from renewables like solar or wind. Now, these specific renewables also have a carbon footprint, although it's very small, but they still have some carbon footprint. Now, what we have been showing is that utilizing our technology will always bring the carbon footprint to negative values because we are consuming CO2 during the process. And that is a very important factor to take into account because you're actually consuming CO2 because it's our feedstock and we are producing something else than CO2, basically. We are producing feedstock for petrochemical or chemical industry, and our goal is to produce this feedstock in a way so that it's stored into materials that we can utilize. So materials being made from actually CO2. And that brings your carbon footprint to negative values. And that is actually what we are aiming for.
So Moving on to the next questions, that is more of a slight curiosity. So why did you choose to act upon reducing CO2 rather than other compounds, for example, nitrogen or particulate matter or methane or others?
That is also a very, very good question. And actually, the answer is very simple. You have to walk before you can run. So we started with the idea to start off with something very simple that everyone can understand. You reduce CO2 to CO. And that's how we mitigate the CO2 emissions. And that's a very, let's say, simplified way to tell the story. But it can get more complex. You mentioned, for example, NOx, particulate matter, or methane. And to be honest, methane, we are also working on that respect. And that's through a process called dry reforming of methane. So you are in thinking in the right direction. And we are working on that. We are even piloting this specific topic. But you have to choose your battles very carefully, because if we would come out with a startup that does everything, then it's also not that trustworthy to start off from. And we want to, so you can imagine, if you start a startup company, you want to focus, because everything, every effort that you're doing is very important. So you have to choose your battles. So in the next few years, we will be focusing also on methane, and there are plans also to start working on NOx, on nitrogen fixation as well.
So thank you first. As a quick follow-up question, you are so doing some research on the other pollutants. You mentioned methane, for example, in order to, I mean, in the future to build up something more.
If you look at methane, it's a very interesting molecule, because it's much more hazardous compared to CO2 regarding its greenhouse capacity, basically. So we see a lot of potential in methane. And the reason for that is, if we add methane to our process in combination with CO2, then we are not only producing carbon monoxide, but also hydrogen. And we see that there's a big shift in industry also towards hydrogen as, let's say, feedstock or energy carrier. So that's why we see a lot of potential in the dry reforming of methane. So that's a combination of CO2 plus methane. And that's what we see as the future potential of decarbon. But this type of technology is still, let's say, relatively low. At decarbon, we're already looking at piloting, implementation in industry, while the dry reforming of methane is still in a, let's call it, more lab environment.
Wonderful. And since we are on the topics of what the next big mega push for emissions reductions or emissions removal should be, how do you see your plasma-based technology in the upcoming years? Which markets would you think would be the most, and I wouldn't use the word attractive, but I would say, which markets do you think would require or would need this technology the most in terms of its scaling up to fit such large economies of scale and basically reduce emissions faster than at the rate it's being added today?
Also a very good question. With our pilot project that we have ongoing right now, we are working with several markets already. We are now targeting a pilot line that can that has a capacity of 1,000 tons of CO2 per year. And that volume seems very low, but it's very important to realize that this is just validation, of course. And the partners there are ArcelorMittal that I can mention, BASF I can mention. So we have two very big players, one from the steelmaking industry and one from the chemical industry. And these are the two main markets that the carbon is targeting. I can give you an example for the steelmaking industry. You have to imagine a blast furnace. What is this doing? Basically, you have iron oxide and you want to reduce the iron oxide to iron, basically. That's the main purpose of this blast furnace. What you can inject, for example, is hydrogen, but that's very, let's call it, expensive, because that requires a whole new installation. What they are doing at this moment is they're feeding it with cokes to produce carbon monoxide. And this carbon monoxide actually takes one oxygen from the iron oxide. So you make iron, but you produce CO2. Approximately 1 million tons of CO2 per blast furnace per year. So it's a huge emission of CO2, the steelmaking industry. And our proposal that we are working out with the steelmaking industry is not to use cokes, but to take the CO2, to reduce the CO2 back to CO with decarbon's technology, and to re-inject the CO straight away into the blast furnace. And what you do is you create a circular blast furnace, for example. And that is the ultimate dream of decarbon, basically.
So thank you for your answer, Gil. Now, moving on to more to some career advice questions. What are the biggest opportunities for young students and professionals while working with companies like Decarbon?
Well, I would say it's an exciting time to start working. Exciting might be a strange word, because we all know what the challenges are and how the future will look like if we don't do anything. So for young people, young, motivated, enthusiastic people, dreamers that want to change the world, I think it's a very interesting time to start working. With Decarbon, I consider Decarbon as a very sexy company, because it's a young, innovative company. I'm the oldest of the pack here, but I'm working with very young, motivated people who all have, let's say, one big dream, and that is to create a better future, not only for themselves, but for also their children, their grandchildren. And that's the main target of Decarbon, is to create a nice, innovative working environment where everybody is working towards the same targets, basically. And I feel that it resonates very well with young people. They are not so much more motivated in the past by a big paycheck, but much more by the principles that we are pursuing. The mission, the vision needs to be there. It has to have a purpose. And I think with Decarbon, that is certainly there.
Wonderful, wonderful. And I think most of what you mentioned is absolutely true nowadays, especially the EU, where we have a lot of bright, young, talented individuals who are just looking, who are bursting with energy and filled with this purpose that you mentioned, in order to contribute something not just for the current generation, but also for the previous generation, so that they can have this greener world to live, and also for the future generations. And as a part of this, I or we in Talk Energy with Yes Europe have decided, at least from now on, to ask our guests a series of personal questions where we then determine what they think about the clean tech ecosystem and what basically they can offer as advice for aspiring professionals in the sector. So are you ready for the questions?
Absolutely.
Awesome. So the first question basically takes over from where you just left off. So you mentioned that, you know, people need to have this purpose and work with such principles. I want to focus a bit more on values and emotions. So what, according to you, are the three most important values that is necessary for, or that would help a young professional joining the sector, the clean tech sector today?
Yes. By far, number one, you have to be curious. That's always one aspect that I'm always searching for new colleagues. If I have the feeling that they are curious, then usually this is followed by perseverance, a critical mindset. So curiosity, by far, number one in everything that I'm searching for in new talent. The second is because of my Flemish background. I don't know if you're very good at or if you know Flemish people, but Flemish people are very reserved and risk adverse. And I'm absolutely not looking for that. Flemish people in general are too reserved. While, if I can be honest, there's a lot of talent also in Flanders, by extension in Europe. But if you compare it to the United States, for example, it's a whole different mindset. And I like to challenge the people that I'm working with, that I'm collaborating with, to adopt that mindset. Because it's true, if you think that you can win, you will probably win. But if you think even for a second that you might lose, you will probably lose. That's my personal opinion. So I'm really looking for people who are not afraid of taking decisions, that have a strong mindset. I don't mind to have to work with people to have a strong mindset. Because, yeah, if you work with, we call them yes-nodders, so that people only say yes, yes, very good, then you don't have this critical mindset that you need to improve. So I don't mind to be challenged because it only pushes innovation. So that's also a mindset. So I would say fearless a little bit. So I like also expats because they have more this mindset of change. They're not afraid of change. Risk takers because they left their families to pursue something that they are believing. I'm working with let's say a very multicultural team. I'm Flemish, my partner is Flemish, but that's it. I'm there for the rest, we're working with expats. And I like that. I like that tremendously. And then the last feature that I'm also looking for is, I would call it ability to love. It might sound strange, but I like to work with nice people.
Absolutely. Yes. No, this is definitely... Yeah.
Toxicity is the killer of dreams.
True that. Yeah. So just to summarize that, basically you're looking for people, that the three values that you'd love to give to as an advice to young professionals is be curious and persevere with your curiosity. don't be afraid to take risks, and for that which you need a strong mindset and a lot of fearlessness, and ultimately you just have the ability to love either it with the work you're doing or the team that you're working with or the entire ecosystem that you're a part of. Very, very yes. Well put. And ultimately, another question that just pops up in my mind is basically, we all know that where we are, at least we don't get to where we are on our own, but rather by standing on the shoulders of giants. And so naturally, it goes also for, without saying that, why to become better in this business or in the work that we're doing, we need to always have role models. So which person or which book would you recommend listeners to listen to or to read about in order to get a deeper understanding of clean tech or energy transition?
For me, game changer was Getting to Yes from Simon Sinek. I read that Absolutely. Book several times, yes.
Simon Sinek. Not a one to miss. Yep. So that being said, this was really, really a great chat that we had. We, at least Carlotta and I, we had an amazing time learning and interacting with you. I take this opportunity on the behalf of Yes Europe to wish you and the Carbon all the very best with your upcoming projects and endeavors. And I hope that we definitely keep track of the work that Decarbon is doing, and we have the opportunity to chat sometime down the line with the amazing progress that you've made and you will be making so far. And that's it from our side. Thank you so much to all the listeners who tuned in for this episode.